You're listening to the Real Estate Runway podcast, powered by Quattro Capital, where we are all about alternative business and investment strategies to help you amplify life and maximize wealth. Here's your host, the recovering engineer turned multifamily investor, Chad Sutton.
So today, Real Estate Runway family, we're going to have my personal coach, Tommy Newberry, on the show today. This guy has done wonders for my mindset and just business and life execution perspective in my life and the group that I am a part of. So wanted to bring him on and share a little bit. And so let's get right into that. And before we do, look, if you like this show, if it gives you any value, like it, share it, star it, whatever it is you're on, just do that. That's the only way to pay it forward and get to more people like you. All right, let's get into it. All right. Real Estate Runway family, welcome to a special edition episode of the Real Estate Runway podcast. I have with me the one and only Tommy Newberry of the 1% Club. This is my dear friend, my coach, my mentor, and he agreed after a couple of begging sessions, just kidding, he agreed on the first try, to come on the show and share some nuggets with you guys. So I'm excited to have Tommy. Welcome to the show. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing fantastic, Chad, and thanks for having me. I've been looking forward to this. Curious, but looking forward to it.
Yeah, we won't beat you up too bad here. I know a lot about you, so I can ask some probing questions. Look, before we get into this, and the premise here, folks, is we're going to be talking about how mindset makes all the difference. And I know I do this from time to time. It's not real estate related. It's life related. Anything you're doing, what's going on between your ears matters a lot. And there's nobody better to talk about this than who beats on what's going on in my ears a lot of the time. Tommy, before we get on to the show, give us a little segment about just who you are and how you came to be the man you are today and in the profession you are today before we go into some nuggets there.
Yes, I've been in an odd spot. The coaching profession is probably widely known now as being about 20 years old, but this is my 32nd year. So when I got into coaching at 25, there was nobody else really calling themselves a coach unless you were in athletics or something like that. But I was passionate about baseball growing up and really all sports and coach baseball and love sports and love the idea of seeing people who were not getting the results that they were capable of and being able to communicate with them and then have that not work and then try something different and have that not work and then try a third thing and then all of a sudden see them get it and figure it out. I have been coaching not athletes for the most part. I've been coaching entrepreneurs for the last 30 years. And I got into it though from my love for sports. And so since my baseball career ended before I wanted it to, I got into coaching baseball and I loved it. And then I realized that wasn't where I wanted to apply my coaching. I saw there was a void. And this was when I was around 24, almost 25, about a month before my 25th birthday. And I realized there was nobody, there were motivational speakers, there were authors, there were consultants were really big, even for small business back then. But there was nobody coming into those who are already doing quite well and helping them get to the next level. And there was nobody coming in helping with all areas of life. It was just business and sales oriented. In fact, early on, I did sales and time management workshops to get in the door, because that was how you would get in the door. And then I would add on to that. And then the third thing is nobody, Tony Robbins was around and some of the older guys, Brian Tracy, wonderful people, especially Brian Tracy, who turned into a mentor for me, but they were old school. And so they'd come into Atlanta one day, they'd go into Dallas, Texas, the next day into Charlotte, and it was boom, they're in. So I thought long-term relationships. So it was working with people who are already very successful. Let's say they had the silver medal or the bronze medal and they wanted to get the gold, metaphorically, and then working with them in all areas of life and then working with them over time. And so that kind of became my thing. And so I was single, living in an apartment, of course, no kids. And most of the people that I worked with were married with a couple of kids. I was 25, they were 32. Called on lots of businesses in the Atlanta area at the time, couldn't get any business. So I had to come up with a different strategy, which was I'll give away my services for a quarter. And that was my end. I said, I'll work with you for a quarter. At the end, if I delivered what I promised or exceeded it, you pay me X. and 10 out of the first 12 paid me. And that was my foot in the door, because I did this about 10 years ago was the last time, but all but maybe two clients on the last 30 years came from that original 12. And two of the guys that didn't think it was merited what I was charging said they would give me advice. And I said, how about you give me the advice and we go double or nothing for one more quarter. And then I got them in, just because I believe that if you have, what I do is not complicated. If you have somebody looking from the outside and examining your behaviors, and they only have one thing in it, if you don't, it's like the old Vidal Sassoon, the hairstylist, saying, if you don't look good, I don't look good. So I have one incentive. I'm not the business partner who's maybe got some mixed motives. I'm not an investor. I'm not somebody on the outside that is not interested in having a long-term relationship. Therefore, I'm vested in you getting great results. I got married a couple of years later. Now I've been married, come spring of, I'll be married 30 years, and I've got three grown boys. The third one is questionable, but he's almost grown. I've got two boys out of college and one about to enter college. And that's the history of what I've been doing. I've been focused in that one area since 2.5 years out of college.
Yeah, that's an incredible background. And it just speaks to the fact that you've been doing this before it was cool, to say the simple thing. There are a lot of coaches out there right now. And
a huge profession now.
Yeah,
and it is. Get it. It was weird. People would often ask me, so you do that full time?
You do
that full time. In fact, I'd been married for about 10 years and I met somebody. My wife was with me at some cookout or something. And I explained what I did, apparently poorly. And they go, so you do that full time? I said, but yeah, for the last 10 years.
That's when they turn to your wife and say, so what do you do for a living? Because you must pay the bills.
You must make a lot of money.
Yeah, exactly. What's cool about what you do in the 1% Club that's different than anywhere else I've found coaching. And folks, I'm a highly coached individual. I told this to Tommy when I was introduced to him by a dear friend of mine who's actually also an investor in Quattro. So there was some mutual connection there. But I'd never heard, you know, mindset broken down into five different categories that matter in life. And I've always been trained to be really good at what you do. That's business or profession, whatever it is you're doing, be awesome at it. And sometimes that comes at the expense of other aspects of your life, more times than not. And when I found Coach Tommy here, who is really focusing on, look, you got to be good at five things here. You got to be a good Christian, you know, or your faith has got to be really strong. You got to be a strong husband. You got to be a strong father. You got to be strong in your fitness, because if you don't have that, what else matters? You can't take your health for granted. And then you go after business. And it's my understanding that it's in that order. So let's go down that walkway a little bit of how you came to that conclusion and the importance of each of those, because it sure has made an impact on my life. And I want to make sure that the source here communicates that out to the audience, but in a better way than I ever could.
Yeah, I didn't understand it completely when I got started, but I quickly realized that people aren't going to be happy if they just succeed in their business, but they've got a highly dysfunctional personal life. And then, of course, they're not going to be happy if they can't make any money. We just need to be blunt. If you want to be able to have it's possible to be broke and have a positive impact, but it's a lot harder. And it became apparent to me that there were a lot of people who wanted to be good husbands or good wives, good parents, and they wanted to be fit. And they would state those things so broadly, and nothing would, unless you're living in a really weird spot. The husband next door wants to be a good dad and husband, and the same thing on the one on the other side. But why aren't they? Why aren't they actually lining up their behavior with their intentions? And it was just like, it was so vague. They really didn't have an idea. It was just a thought. So I started to see that people would get stuck in their fitness. Fitness is huge. Every year that we've been doing this, over three decades now, every year it's become more and more important. Probably wasn't very important in 91, 92, 93. And then it gradually became more important because I saw a pattern that people who were sloppy, so I'm not meaning just like people that are fat and obviously out of shape. I'm talking about sloppy. That's something that happens as a result of drift. You just drift into it. Longer nights, you want to be a good dad, time pressures, so workouts get squeezed, you're eating poorly, all of a sudden you're out of shape. You take that physical body with you everywhere you go. So I saw people fighting their bodies so much and having a couple of hours, maybe 90 minutes less energy in a day. And then you add that, you multiply that over the week, that's a lot of lost productivity time. So people would try to get better. And then I'd hear about rocky marriages. And I'm meaning like standard rocky marriages, not like something awful. I'm just meaning the normal stress of that anybody can relate to who's been married maybe more than an hour and a half or something like that.
Past the honeymoon.
Yeah, past the honeymoon. But particularly after 5 years, there's just some human nature takes over and a lot of issues that were kept undercover begin to surface. That's just part of it. And they struggled. So what do those things have in common? Or maybe they weren't hitting that financial goal year after year, but they were close, but they weren't exploding. They weren't scaling. And so that I realized it first with the fitness. And it's so tangible, it was more obvious. You could package it a little bit. Is something, a switch has to flip in your mind. This is a mindset change that I'm describing. It has to change first. And for example, on the fitness side, one has to make a decision, which is a part of mindset, that I'm going to be super fit. And a decision is interesting because when you decide something, it means you're choosing something over everything else. When you decide to marry this person, you're choosing this person over everything else. A lot of people make preferences and intentions and hope fors, but they don't really make a decision. How do you know if somebody's made a decision to get super fit? You start to see it. They look different. They sound different. There's more energy. And then the same thing with marriage is we work with men and with women, husbands and wives over the last 32 years. Right now, a big chunk of who we're working with is just men because we see that as a incredible opportunity to shape leaders who are entrepreneurs, who have a unique set of issues, men issues, so related to being a father, a husband, their faith, their health, and then business, that is a lot easier to address in a room filled with other men than it is to have a mixed audience. But what I saw across, whether it's husbands or wives, males or females, is we have to get out of our own way. And how do you get out of your own way? You shoot ahead mentally. So it's, if it's a Wednesday, you're not at Wednesday mentally. You're ahead. You've gone ahead. You've gone down the road. If you are 40 years old, there's a lot of 50-year-old and 60-year-old thoughts inside your head. I mean that in a good way. You have already made peace with who you're going to be a decade or two down the road. You have a vision, but you don't just have the vision. You're thinking from the vision. You're not just thinking about the top of the mountain. You're thinking from the top of the mountain. And so when you begin to think like the person you intend to be, everything changes. So when you begin to think like a leader, you start to eat differently and act differently. When you start to think like a loving, fun, self-confident husband, everything changes. And the same thing with multiples on the financial side. There's so much psychology that is identical with marriage and business. And men often have a much easier time mastering the business than they do the marriage. But when they've mastered the business and the marriage isn't just right, it really takes away a lot of the joy and satisfaction. We have just decided that mindset makes all the difference. Almost all of our coaching drills, almost all of my one-on-one coaching sessions, they all somehow, sometimes in a sneaky way, come back to your mindset. And you can try everything else. One other thing on here that's a good visual is when you try to fix things on the outside, which is what humans like to do, we like to manipulate things. We like to change what we're wearing. We like to grow a beard if we haven't had a beard, shave if we've had one. We like to change our clothes, our locations, our environments, our team, but we hate to change ourselves. So when you begin to change yourself, you begin to see things that are different in your world. You see your wife differently. If you see her differently, you respond to her differently, then she picks up on that. You see the prospects, the investors, the centers of influence. You see them in such a way that you realize you are in demand, that you are worthy, that you've got something valuable with your spouse, that you're a great catch, that you, and it's an intangible, but you can see it in people who've got it. And if you work on the mindset, then like dominoes, everything in your personal life and your business life begins to fall in place. If you don't, it's like a bungee cord where it's stretched through your own efforts. You stretched it just through sheer will, but it's going to bounce back like a bungee cord. Mindset, you change mindset, it's you stretched it, and it doesn't go back to its original upright and locked position.
I love that. And I love talking in analogies, and what you just did is fantastic. I'm going to venture one as well. And you're talking about making distinct decisions about where you want to be and making that decision from the point of the mountaintop and looking back on yourself it's how you're there before you're there. And so if I can venture an analogy, think about those houses you've seen, folks, where you're in a big room and there's a switch bank, like a light switch bank, where there's 10 or 12. Envision there's 100 light switches on that wall, right? And attached to each one of those lights or those switches is a different light in this big room. And so every one of those switches reflects your mindset on a given topic or a decision you've made of how you view a given topic, right? Maybe one's your marriage, maybe one's your children, maybe one's your career, maybe one's your fitness. And you can go on and on because there's literally millions of decisions that we make inside our brain who form who we are. And you are a product in the moment of all the switches that you've made on each one of those decisions in your life. That's just the fact of it. And so the cool thing is when you think about it in terms of light switches, if you make a decision that you don't like this, you turn that one off. And so that area of the room goes dark. And then you make a decision that you do like this, or you are going to see yourself in this way, and that area of the room goes light. And so you think about clarity. The way you get to having the right mindset is having the right clarity on who you are, where you're going, and your views on the world. And so when you think about it that way, that's really all mindset is. It's a series of how you're programming your brain to think and consider things of what reality is. And then to Tommy's point, and I would love to get into the tactical part of this in a minute, is you have to almost visualize what you want that room lit up to look like and figure out, hey, how to flip the right switch to get there, you know? Complex analogy, but it worked in my head.
When they start rolling in, I'll share them with you. Clarity is huge. Clarity is essential.
Yeah.
And if you had asked me what's a surprise that I see, something that I was surprised with early on that I think still slows people down, is the lack of clarity about what they're trying to accomplish, particularly a decade from now, but also in the next month or week. And you ask people certain very simple questions. What are the top three results you want to achieve this week? And you get some, that needs to be super clear. And when you get clear on who you want to become, and really who you're committed to becoming and what you want to achieve, then you have a whole new field of vision, things that you didn't see before. And today we're overloaded with noise and stuff that doesn't really matter, that it's hard to, you have to make time to get clear. So a lot of people would say they're unhappy. I read, I don't remember the source, but it was a pretty credible source, that the unhappiness level today, not surprisingly, is lower than it's been in our lifetime. more people saying they're unhappy. Why is that? We live in relatively good times. We live in relative freedom. There's more options to do what you want. There's a lot of noise and negativity. But why is it that so many people are unhappy? And I have found that people that are unhappy are putting their attention disproportionately on the things that disappoint them or discourage them. You have happy people everywhere and you have unhappy people everywhere, and many of them have the exact same circumstances. It's just that the unhappy people pay excessive attention to their own flaws and other people's flaws, to their own disappointments in life, and they kind of marinate in them. And when they marinate in them, it distorts reality. They lose sense of how great their life really is. Life is intended to be difficult. That video clip that you shared earlier this week was a great reminder that life is, like, our Creator invented life to be difficult so that we would need help from humans, that's relationships, and then from the Creator Himself. And if we can't do our part, which is figuring out what is it we want. The wife, she's very unhappy. What would make you happy? And she can't answer the question. The entrepreneur, he's wanting to scale. What's your vision after you scale? I'm not quite clear. So clarity of desire attracts what you want in interesting, mysterious ways. And lack of clarity or fuzziness, where things seem all jumbled like a junk drawer, tends to repel exactly what you want. And it's fascinating, but wherever anybody is, they can bounce back and recover. We can all be wiped out and build back in a surprisingly short period of time.
Yeah.
And a lot of the junk that we attract into our life and the difficulties and hardships, I don't know whether they were intended or not intended, but one of the greatest mistakes would be not to use them to come out better on the other side.
That's super important, Tommy. And so I want to go directly into this. And by the way, the video he mentioned was, it's on YouTube. You can Google it, or YouTube it rather. It's called Matt Chandler Calls Out Men. It's a 7-minute watch, men or women. Go check it out. Matt will thank me for the likes, but it is an incredible video talking about how you should be looking at life and how we were not put on this earth to be lazy or complacent or anything like that. So it's actually a really good listen. But coming back to what we're talking about here, we've spent a good chunk of this episode talking about what mindset is and maybe the five pillars of life that really matter to have that well-rounded 1% awesome life.
Nectar understands that raising capital is labor and time intensive, and we exist to solve that problem for you. Nectar provides fast, flexible, cash flow-based financing for experienced rental owners and operators. Whether you need cash for acquiring properties, portfolios, or you simply need it for ROI-generating renovations or expansion of staff, Nectar has your back. Grab your 12-month P&L with debt service and click the link in the show notes below to apply today.
So two things I want to hit before we end the podcast here is, I think personally, and this is why I have spent, and I think why so many people spend like decades in this group, is that you have a very tactical approach. Because I've been coached in a lot of ways where it's, okay, great, where you are today, you need to get clarity, not just generically where you want to be in 10 years from now. You need to write it down. You need to be specific, and you need to have, it needs to be a color picture in your mind of what 10 years from now looks like. Then the question is, how the heck do I get there? And we'll go write down goals that align with that vision and get there. That's harder than you think. And so the way that we in the group, you have a very tactical approach to this. Yeah. And I'm thinking in my mind, Tommy, just to use the code words, I'm thinking of the master vision. I'm thinking of the portable coach, the weekly coach, and how you take that clarity of the mountaintop and break it down into what stepping stones do you have to hit? And you keep updating that so that you're course correcting along the way. Let's talk about that a little bit, because I think really getting the right mindset is one thing, but then understanding how in the world do you progress in a tactical way? towards that future?
Yeah, well, it's a important question because, in fact, the only bad thing about mindset is that it's the word is thrown around so much of being overused. However, it's kind of like, you know, another important word like truth or God. I mean, there's a reason things are talked about much is there's some significance. Mindset, kind of the formula, if there is one, is to figure out what you want your life to look like. And that's like so amazingly obvious that I literally think, Chad, that some people discount it because it's too simple. So if I'm sitting down with somebody and I'm trying to help them the fastest way I know how, I would say, tell me what you want your life to look like from now. It doesn't matter what kind of problem you're dealing with. You could have an awesome life, your best life. You could become that world champion version of yourself in a decade, if not in 3 years. So you got to paint that picture. And what happens, and I think you alluded to it, is that sounds like that's an easy ask. And I think some people who maybe give themselves a little bit too much credit for their incapacity think it's elementary, it's pedestrian, it's not necessary. And so they miss out on something. Like I'm not mad at them. I'm upset. I feel sorry for them that they could be even better. They could be intellectual giants and have this great clarity. So first we got to get clear on the long run. I found 10 years is great. Then we plan back from the future. We go, well, if that needs to happen 10 years from now, where might I be for the meat of our program? The 1% Club is all about. It's about a 3-year transformation. And what do you want if you want to be here in 10 years, top of this mountain, then where must you be 36 months from now? Where must you be 1,095 days from now?
And why is it 3 years? Well, why not 2 or 5 or 7? You know, well, why do you pick 3 years?
The whole element of the whole principle behind mindset is if you use a 3-year time frame, then your thinking is much bigger. In other words, if I ask you or you ask me, what's the greatest thing you can accomplish in the next year? Or what's the greatest thing you can accomplish in the next 3 years? The answer, unless there's some weirdness that we don't know about, the answer is going to be much bigger in 3 years. You're going to think, wow, well, I could accomplish something really huge in 3 years. And in 1 year, you almost feel the time pressure instantaneously. And then you have all this history. If you've ever had training and goal setting at a high level, everything's usually around a year. Even back when going through school, a school year, and then just logical New Year's resolutions, which are, you know, kind of a joke. People think in terms of a year. When you say 3 years, what happens is it expands your thinking. We used to ask, what's the most magnificent goal you could reach in the next 3 years? So why is that important? Because and this is like really key, your relationships, your talent, your capabilities, your creativity rise to meet the level of goal that you establish for yourself, which you have to sometimes think about that a little bit. But what it really means is if you set small goals, you don't need much growth. When you set a small goal, you'll attract small people, small resources, a little bit of creativity, all of your talents not needed. But when you have a huge goal that you don't now know how to achieve, we call it huge thinking, but it's setting a goal so big that you don't now know how to achieve it. That's what all of our goals should be, pretty much. They're so big, we don't now know how to achieve them. And so that creates a vacuum, forces us to get better. It forces Tommy to get better. It forces Chad to get better. It forces everybody who thinks like this to get better because they started with a goal that's beyond what they've ever been. And it starts up here. They have to be willing to set a goal without assurance of finality or assurance of completion. So that's why. But then we don't put our head, we don't like live at the 3-year mark or the 10-year mark. We keep breaking it down to where we can attack it in a very tactical way. So we break the the 3 years into 12 quarters, and we break the quarter into 13 weeks. And then each week, of course, is broken into a day. And I have found that the week time frame, which you execute one day at a time, but the week time frame is the best personal productivity time frame ever. You can figure out where somebody is by asking them about their week. We use a tool called the Weekly Coach, and its central aim is to force you to take a stand on what you're going to accomplish in the next 7 days, rather than things you're shooting for. And then since you have to accomplish a week one day at a time, this is super tactical. Make sure you bookend your days with a ritual that affects your mindset, so that when you wake up, before you enter particularly the business world, but preferably before you have any interaction with your wife or your kids or anybody that you're doing business with, you have trained yourself mentally. We call it an early morning success ritual in the morning, where you predetermine, and you like live with this for a quarter or more, what are you going to do to affect positively, to train, to lift up yourself spiritually, mentally, which is focusing on the goals and the outcomes, and then physically, taking care of your body. And then you do that, and you might spend 30 minutes. We've got clients that spend 2.5 hours, and they spend so much time. It reminds me of some of the NFL greats who will be at the stadium so early to go through extra stretching. They'll be in the hot tub. They'll get a massage. They'll get a chiropractic adjustment. They'll get out and loosen up. They'll go watch film. In other words, they don't just walk out there, even though they're gifted. And then at the end of the day, you bookend it, not with a much of a time-consuming thing, but you do certain things in the evening, prepare yourself to have a great start to the next day and to sleep well. Because here's one magic problem. If you don't sleep well, that can be a game changer right there. We can get away with it for a few days, a few weeks, maybe a few months, but we need to sleep well. So the nighttime success ritual, get yourself ready to sleep well. Maybe there's 3 or 4 things you do. And then you wake up in the morning, you work on your spirit, you work on your mindset, and you work on your physical body. Then you go out into the marketplace and lead your day in the best way you know how, trying to make every day better and lining up your thoughts. This is key. When people say something to you, or you get bad news, or you see something in your inbox or on a text, this is a discipline. And both of us, all of us, have a lifetime of work trying to optimize this, but it's responding to what the world throws at us in such a way that presumes we're still on track to reach our master vision, that we're still on track to become that person we described that we want to be, top of the mountain 10 years from now.
I love that. And I feel like I'm getting free coaching here, as even though I'm part of the program. So folks, thank you for that, because I'm getting some extra reps. You're just listening to this. But, you know, folks, when you think about it, just think about the sports analogy where you have someone who's trying to go pro in a sport. And they have that master vision. They've described what 10 years from now looks like. If they're on this team, wearing this colors, this is what their day is like, all that kind of stuff. Then they've got to reverse engineer, okay, from now to 3 years from now, what needs to be true? What are my 3-year goals I'm going to attack? And then how do I break those down into quarterly things that I can measure my progress, my stepping stones along the way? A quarter's too long to measure even. So how do I break that down into 13 weekly plans of what I'm going to do starting every Sunday and ending every Saturday to accomplish those goals, my weekly productivity. And then that winds up setting your day. And oh, by the way, before you step on the field, whatever field you're playing on that's not professional level, before you step on that field, you have your morning routine, your pregame routine, if you will, and then your postgame routine that preps you for the next day. And so this is what I mean, folks, when I'm talking about you have to be tactical with this. And this is the secret sauce of how some people learn about what mindset is and how to dream and set goals. But there's a difference in goal setting and executing, right? And so that there's an execution side of goal setting that is required. And you're always updating along the way, you know?
Let me add one thing there, Chad, is the peer group, the reference group that you associate with, has a tremendous influence on who you become and how your mindset develops. So your mind is like the software and your brain is like the hardware, just for another quick kind of analogy. And we are definitely in charge of our thinking. We don't need to be perfect with it, but we want to think like the person that we intend to be down the road. So we want to think beyond today. And then the good thing is, any quirks we have, and we all have them, any issues with our brain within a sphere of a continuum without the extremes. In other words, there is plasticity, a neuroplasticity, which allows us to become basically anything that we want to become. That means we can really deteriorate, or we can grow well beyond what anybody ever thought we could become, including ourselves. We can become excellent in some area of life that we thought we had no giftedness for, if that's what we want to do. We can become great at real estate at 50 years old if we've never had any to do it. But when you voluntarily put yourself in the presence of other like-minded individuals who will not let you off the hook, it's invaluable. I mean, people that won't accept your excuse or will call you out when it looks like you're getting fat or on your sloppy answers to some very basic questions, people that will challenge you, it's not comfortable, but if we're willing to be uncomfortable, that's where the mindset growth can kind of become exponential. And it happens for good or for bad with who we hang out with.
Yeah, it does. You're the sum average of the people you're around, the five people even. But if you can associate yourself with a group like this, where, you know, all that stuff you put on paper, oh, by the way, there's accountability there. And you're going to be reporting out minimum on a quarterly, if not weekly basis on how you do it. But that's a huge game changer. I'll tell you that from personal experience. And folks, we're coming to the end of the episode. I'm going to go a little bit long here, because there's one thing I want Tommy to do for you in 2 minutes that is something you can apply to your life today that I promise you will make all the difference. Okay. So Tommy, I'm thinking in my head of the 4-8 principle. You've alluded to some of those thoughts a little bit here throughout the day, but you have a wonderful analogy about focusing on red dots and white dots and how you explain this. In about 2 minutes, let's do that so we can get to your questions and get you on to your 2 o'clock appointment.
That is fantastic. Yeah. So the 4-8 principle is based on a Bible verse in the book of Philippians in the New Testament. And this is where the Apostle Paul says, finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is lovely, pure, true, gracious, just, if there's any excellence, anything worthy of praise, think on these things. If I put it in modern day vernacular, it is focus on the good stuff. And the reason this is important is because we were designed where we could choose what we focus on. So Paul knew that we were not automatically positive. How do I know that? Because he put this advice, this admonition in Philippians 4:8. It says, think on good things. If we were automatically positive, we wouldn't need that instruction. And if we were hopelessly negative, we wouldn't need the instructions either, because that advice would be in vain. So Paul knew we were not hopelessly negative or automatically positive. So he told us to focus on the good things. And oftentimes when I'm in front of a large audience, I will have a large jar of marbles or golf balls, and I'll have red golf balls and white golf balls. And sometimes they're of different sizes. So there might be a lacrosse ball mixed in there or a marble to represent something smaller. But the red are the traumas we've had, the trouble, the disappointments, the sadness, the failures. And we've all got it. We've all got red golf balls. And then the white, whether it's a marble or a lacrosse ball or a golf ball, the white are the blessings and the good stuff, the victories, the strengths, the things we're looking forward to. And we all have those as well. And I show each of those to the audience. And I say, here's what happens because of our human nature. We tend to dwell on the red. We tend to dwell and even fixate on what's missing and what's broken. We tend to focus on what's broken instead of what's beautiful, even though there's beautiful, beautiful things all around us. And whatever we focus on, we notice more of. So if you focus on red golf balls, you start to see red golf balls everywhere. If you focus on your blessings, which is a great thing to do during your EMSR or your nighttime success ritual in the evening, if you focus on your blessings, meaning writing them or playing them over and over again in your mind, you start noticing more of your blessings. So one weird thing that happens is if you focus too much on the red, it will appear to you, whoever is doing it, that there's fewer white golf balls. And even some of the white golf balls might become pink because they've taken on the color of the excess negativity. This is particularly prevalent in marriages where a spouse will fixate on a problem and forget about or delete all the good stuff. And that's, in a way, I think Philippians 4:8 was invented for marriage, but it's also very valuable in the workplace where the message is focus on your strengths. You say, well, there's not an opportunity to hear. There's not an opportunity here. There's not an opportunity here. Those are red golf balls. What about this little white marble of opportunity here? Why? What about that? Well, that's so small. Well, let's focus on it and see what happens. And if you focus on what you can do versus all the things you can't do, then what you can do will start to get fed and nourished, and it will begin to grow and expand, and it will multiply. But too often, we look toward what's missing and what doesn't work, and we live there. And that is a path to where you're not happy, and you don't have the peace, and your mindset becomes an adversary when I believe God intended for your mindset to be your best friend.
That's beautiful. And the point is here, folks, just focus on the good, not the bad. Focus on the white, not the red. And I promise you, personal experience, you will start to see red golf balls appear less red, maybe pink. Your problems appear less bad when you focus on the good things in your life. And it's funny, a lot of us, most of us, have more good things in our life than bad. It's just those one or two red golf balls are so bright red that they just draw your attention off the white, you know? So
yeah, it's a mental game. It's a mental game that it's winnable and it's worth the price you have to pay for it. And if you're 30 before you learn this, no problem. If you're 60 before you learn this, no problem. In other words, you can't force things. It's never too far behind. You can always catch up. You can always make yourself into a great story.
Mike, drop the moment right there. We're going to get into a couple of questions, Tommy, and then we'll get you back on to your busy day. First one. And I think we've heard a lot of it today, but Tommy, what's your superpower, life or business, and how does it serve you well?
I think my superpower is helping ambitious entrepreneurs get clear on what they want to create. And some of that, I know I've gotten a lot better over the years, but there was some kind of natural instinct that I have of asking the right questions at the right time in the right way. And I think I hear differently also. I think I hear what people don't say, which then leads me to a question that needs to come up.
Yeah.
Kind of like a lawyer in a trial might hear what the witness didn't say, and then he'll craft the next question based on that to try to draw him out of it for legal reasons. I try to draw it out of people for performance reasons, like plan at level 7 when he could be playing at level 15.
Yeah.
Because he's certainly working hard enough and trying hard enough.
And that's a big piece of accountability you need in a coach, folks. So that's the right strength to be looking for. Flip the coin over. Let's talk about a big failure or mistake. What was it and what'd you learn from it?
Well, there's a lot of little ones. Fortunately, not very many big ones. One that stands out to me is a long time ago. Since I still think of it when I'm asked that question, it must still sting a little bit. But my interest in baseball that I grew up with and that I was so passionate about that eventually fizzled was a huge disappointment. And I do know I had the physical ability. So ironically, Chad, what we're talking about of mindset, if I knew now, if I could go back to my 18-year-old body, my 20-year-old body, if I knew now about mindset, if I knew then of what I know now about mindset, I'd probably still be playing, or not playing, but I would be coaching and involved. So that was the failure, was I didn't make it when I really believed and still believe to this day that I had the physical equipment to do it. And I saw people that I did not know that made it, who I know they didn't have as much talent as I did, and they made it. So that means the common denominator is me. And then I had one particular friend that I played with for 6 years, who played 17 years in the big leagues. And he probably was more talented than me. But at 15, 16, 17 years old, we were on the same level. So we both should have been there. And so what did I learn overall is that some of the goals that I think God puts in our mind to pursue, we'll either reach them, or there'll be a great benefit for who you become as a consequence of the pursuit. So as much as I hated to admit it, I was probably 30 before I did. I believe that my passion for baseball kept me on a path to ultimately end up doing what I'm doing now, and helped me to say no to certain distractions that people are faced with when they're growing up and when they're young. I just wanted to play baseball. I would have done anything to play baseball, but I've turned that baseball passion into coaching passion and then coaching entrepreneur passion.
That's a great way to turn a failure into success. That was well said, Coach. Third question, and then the last one's a softball. The third question is, here at Quattro, philanthropy is one of our four pillars. And so I love to give our guests an opportunity to share their philanthropic heart, where you give back with your time, talents, and treasure. And, you know, a lot of times we've had reports of people through the audience kind of co-donating to something that sparks in their heart. So what is that for you?
For me, there's two things that I'm particularly passionate about. One is fighting Alzheimer's. My father died of Alzheimer's. So I knew of it before, of course. But I was able to see it up close, and it's an agonizing illness that I believe is solvable. So I'm very passionate about that. And the other thing I'm very passionate about is preserving and amplifying the free market. I believe that for whatever reason, I have my theories, but that would be a whole other show. There's just so much angst and negativity toward those who are successful and toward free enterprise, that I am a big, big supporter of the institutions that are working full time to educate the next generation about the free market and to educate the entire world about all the blessings that have come and all the people that have been lifted up, particularly in this country, but it expands around the world because of entrepreneurs who took the gloves off, took a risk, their homes, their capital, their futures, to create a service or a product that would be valuable to their fellow citizens. And then, because of competition, they were forced to make that better and better. And when you walk into a grocery store in the USA, you get no better sense of the magnitude and the abundance that comes from people wanting to serve others with goods and services than in the free marketplace that we have here. As many blemishes as there are, having a free market, I think, is a divinely inspired dynamic that forces us to serve others and do so in a way that they want to be served. And then the fun part of it is to compete with others who are also trying to serve others. I just think it's cool. So I support Prager University, the Heritage Foundation, American Enterprise Institute, Job Creators Network, and all sorts of organizations like that that are helping communicate those truths to the world.
I love that, Coach. And last question, it is a softball. What's the best way to get in contact with you and the 1% Club to learn more, or just say thanks for the episode?
Yeah, the best way is TommyNewberry.com. It's pretty easy to find, TommyNewberry.com. We also have a great challenge called the 40-Day Joy Challenge, and you can find that out at Joy Chat personally as on the business side, because when you get your mindset right, everything else seems to fall in place.
I love it. Coach, thank you for honoring us with your time, coming on the show, and I guess I'll look forward to our call tomorrow, which is where I will be getting my butt kicked in our typical accountability session. So I'll go get my mind right for that. But thanks for coming, Coach.
Tomorrow.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for having me.
Do you manage multiple legal entities? Is your data scattered across various unsecure systems? Is your team spending too much time on manual processes? Do you struggle to meet reporting deadlines? Simplify entity management and compliance with Entity Keeper. Entity Keeper helps easily manage entities, build and maintain complex organizational charts, and track filing deadlines, all in one secure, cloud-based platform. And with automated alerts and centralized document storage, you'll stay two steps ahead of compliance deadlines. Click the link in the show notes to learn more and book a demo.
All right, family, I hope you enjoyed that episode. That was near and dear to my heart. It was almost like getting a personal coaching session with my already coach here on your behalf. So thank you for that. And look, I was serious about the 4-8 principle. And if you think about nothing else, just think about the good, bad principle. What you focus on is what you see. If you don't believe me, there's a cool video on YouTube where these people are passing a basketball back and forth. And the video says, look at the basketball and count how many times they pass it. And so while you're doing that and focusing on the basketball, this guy in a gorilla suit walks across from one side to the other, and you don't see it unless you're looking for it. So it's case in point, you focus on what you're looking for. And if you're looking for bad, you will focus on bad. If you're looking for good, you will focus on good. So I promise you that will change your life if you just apply that one principle. Folks, I've enjoyed this time with you today. If you got any value out of the show, like, subscribe, heart, whatever the thing is you're on, swipe right, whatever thing you're watching this on, just interact with it, share it with somebody. That's all we need to grow the show and to get to more people just like you. So folks, pay it forward. This has been another episode of the Real Estate Runway Podcast. Until next time, over and out, folks.
We hope this episode was insightful and brought value to your day. If so, please be awesome and leave us a 5-star review. Find out how Team Quattro can help you at thequattroway.com. Until next time, this is the Real Estate Runway Podcast.